Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Hello there.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson. You know, your Cloudlandia announcer who welcomes us to the call always promises there's going to be others, but there never is. There's just one.
Just us. We're waiting for others just to join. Yeah. I am other.
We're waiting for others to catch up.
That's exactly right. Well, yeah. How do you feel? You're an hour short I don't like this.
I've been confused about five times so far today.
Okay.
Part of the reason is my watch and my cell phone are in another time zone, and that's reflected. But my computer is still in Toronto.
Oh, my goodness. That's so funny. Are you in Chicago right now? Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah, it's a little FU from winter, you know, you get this little kick in winter. Yeah,
not only that, I'm taking, okay, I'll leave, but I'm taking an hour with me.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we can't complain because we got an extra day this year. We got 24 extra hours, so I guess we'll just deduct it from that surplus.
But that's in the past.
That is in the past. You know, lately.
That's right. You know, I haven't really studied where that came from, but I think it has to do with farming.
Daylight savings? Yeah, I think it was too. Absolutely. To extend harvest times in the summer, you know, work more.
Yeah.
I thought we were trying to get rid of it.
Who's
we as a, you know, that's the inclusive version of they. I thought they were trying. I thought we were trying to get rid of it.
Yeah. No, I haven't really devoted an hour and a minute of time to that particular project.
I know Florida is like Arizona, it's considering staying on daylight savings time at all times. And I think there were a lot of states that were looking to do that. And I thought, oh boy, what a mess that would be. It's already enough of a nuisance that Arizona doesn't participate.
You know, I would vote for keeping it.
Yeah?
You know why? Because it's quirky.
It is a little bit quirky. And you know what? For me in Florida.
And I like quirkiness in other people. So why wouldn't I like quirky in the time system?
Well, you know, it's the only way that I mark the season changes. That for me is like the transition into, you know, spring, summer. And then I know when we get to daylight savings. We get fall and winter. Yeah. That's the only thing. It gets darker earlier.
Yeah, it's really interesting because when this is, I'm changing the context here, but it has to do with weights and measurements. You know, the metric system is a French creation. It was created, I think, during Napoleon's reign. And, you know, he tried to standardize and uniform. He make Europe uniform because he wanted to be emperor of Europe, you know, and then emperor of the world, you know. Folks like him sort of have those type of ambitions. And so up until then, you know, you had what is commonly called the imperial system of measurements in the UK, Great Britain, you know, pounds and inches and miles, you know, Fahrenheit, you know, was the measurement measured. And then, you know, Europe adopted the metric system.
Mm-hmm.
And but once Brexit happened, this is in 2016, the merchants were permitted to go back to the imperial system for weights in stores. Grocery stores.
Yeah.
But the bureaucrats who run the, you know, who run the system in Britain. So it's I think it's a bit of an entrepreneurial versus bureaucratic standoff.
Yeah.
So it's a real mishmash in Great Britain now. And I kind of like that because almost everything else about Great Britain is a mishmash.
I think that's so funny, you know. It's like the...
Mishmashes. My favorite kind of food is a mishmash.
There was a Saturday Night Live skit where they were founding the United States and deciding, you know, the guy was saying how we would adopt a system of measurements that would be, you know, there'd be 1 foot is the thing and there'll be 3 feet in a yard, and the whole, you know, it just made no sense because the metric system is such an easier system, you know, how many feet in a mile? And he was saying, nobody knows how many feet in a mile.
You know why it'll never happen in the United States? It's because of sports.
Oh, yeah, 100 yards for football. Right?
100 yards, a 350-foot home run, you know, 7-foot center.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Yeah, but in Toronto, well, they try to impose it on the sports reporting in Toronto, but nobody pays any attention to it. I mean, I've never switched over. I've been in Toronto for 53 years.
Well, listen, so it's 1973, I think, is when the System International started.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got first grade was Imperial. Second grade was SI. So I've been learning, you know, metrics since second grade, but I still think in Imperial. I mean, it's so funny.
We're always doing
the conversion, you know.
Yeah, and it's especially scary when it comes to temperature because zero really means something in Fahrenheit, but it's sort of wishy-washy in metric. You know, zero is like 32 degrees. I mean,
yeah, right, exactly.
You know, well, yeah, you know, 32 degrees. The only place where it meets is 40 degrees, minus 40 degrees. So it's exactly the same.
Okay.
Yeah, but who wants to have that experience?
Oh, man, that's so funny. So when is your next Buenos Aires trip?
It'll be Saturday, 2 weeks. So 2 weeks from yesterday. And this is our fourth. And this may be then the last quick trip. And it'll probably be six months. Now we'll do 6 months. And then probably, depending on how it shows up 6 months from now. Mm. I'm talking about stem cell treatments. And
how are you feeling? Are you starting to notice the differences now?
I'm feeling great. Yeah. The biggest thing is there's still soreness in my knee, but I feel very confident about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, before there was soreness in my knee and I wasn't feeling confident because barring any kind of therapy, it was going to get more sore in the future. And I have a definite confidence that'll be less and less until the soreness disappears, you know, because the cartilage is definitely regrowing.
I was going to say, is there evidence, like, do they quantitatively measure the cartilage
growth?
Yeah,
you do it with an MRI. The MRI can show what it was. And what I learned is that it doesn't layer from bottom to top. Like the new cartilage, this is, you know, exactly my cartilage that I lost through an accident in an operation in 1975, so a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And so in those days, they just, you know, it was broken, it was torn, so they cut it out, you know.
Yeah, don't need that anymore.
So they would glue it back together now. They have a surgical glue now that they could glue it back together. But what it does, it comes in vertically, so it's this constant extension, like it's a half of an inch and then it's an inch, and it's very interesting how it comes in. It comes in sideways. It doesn't come in, you know, it doesn't come, you establish a base and then it builds on the base, but I can feel the difference going up and down stairs. That's where my, you know, my daily measurement is really that. More and more, I'm walking up and down stairs normally.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But the biggest thing is the brain stuff, because they have an IV. You can't inject things into the brain. You have to, the thing called lymphoid create a pathway into your brain. So you have the lymphocytes one day, and then 2 days later, they put an IV in, and the cells are actually custom designed for the brain, and so they, once they get into your blood system, they go automatically through the new passageway that the lymphocytes have created, and then they go into your brain. But I really notice in my EEG tests and then neurofeedback program that I'm in, that my concentration, my focus, not being distracted is improving enormously.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So you've got,
for example, we're 13 minutes into the podcast, and not once have I forgotten that I'm talking to you.
Hey, there we go. I like that. That's good news.
Yeah. You count your progress where you find it.
Yeah, that's so funny. So I have something for us to look at next time. I was talking with someone, and they were sharing with me this guy, Yanis Varoufakis. Do you know him? Have you heard of him?
Mm. Yeah, I think I have heard the name, but I'm trying to think where.
So he's just sent me a video called Capitalism Has Mutated Into Something Worse. And he's talking about this, cloud migration or whatever, and how those things are, really owning our, I don't know enough to say. That's why I was wondering if you had heard about him, but essentially saying companies like Amazon, like these big companies, are fiefdoms that control our, the way we see things. Like, your Amazon store, for instance, when you go to Amazon, is very different than my Amazon store, based on everything that all the data that they have about me, kind of thing. When it used to be on the mainland, when you would go to downtown or you'd go to the shopping area, you'd have all the stores. Everybody sees the same thing. It's more of an equal landscape sort of thing. But now, there's advantage in knowing, and having this established, data that everybody, that's what they really have, is access to, amazing amounts of data. So this cloud, the cloud is really changing who's winning in the, even in a global sense, about borders and everything don't really matter anymore. It's not about that. I wonder if that kind of resonates with what, Peter Zion is saying, but.
Yeah, I think Peter Zion's saying exactly the opposite.
Okay. That's why I'm very curious, right? Like that's,
Yeah, he's saying borders matter more than ever.
Okay.
Because of transportation. Okay, so Amazon, you can do anything with Amazon, but it's got to be transported.
Yes,
And transportation is the great constraint, And so, for example, one of the problems that Amazon has with Prime is traffic congestion in cities, so that their promise that we can deliver it in, if you order this morning, you'll have it by noon.
Yeah, I've had that happen.
If traffic permits.
Yeah.
And then there's the labor costs of actually finding drivers that'll do this, for more than just a short period of time. So you always have to be thinking of the labor costs. And so my sense is, he's of a school, whoever this man is. I am suspecting that it's a man. And,
he is. I gotta see it.
Does he identify as a man?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Anyway, it's the same thing. Capitalism doesn't really change. It simply changes the environments in which capitalism is being used, because it's really a methodology for growth. Capitalism is, first of all, it's about pricing, and Amazon are the great price competitors in the world. They introduced a whole new way that, whatever it was, the total cost of getting it to you and the price you had to pay, they could pretty well outcompete anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's capitalism,
Mm-hmm.
And they're moving property, they're moving property from, actually Amazon never owns any property,
which is really, unless they do create or white label or do things themselves, they're pretty robust at that. That's been one of the things that they have as an advantage, is that they create their own brand of stuff, that they see things that are, you know, new products or new things that are selling, and then they create their own version of it, or white label their own version of it, you know, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, we've had not like a product per se, but we've had a continual conversation with Amazon, because with the three best-selling books that we did with Ben Hardy, the book comes out on a Monday, and by Friday, there's another book called Who Not How, and it's the summary of Who Not How. And, you know, you can kind of create a summary of any book now with artificial intelligence in about 10 seconds, you know, 10 seconds. And then there, so our book will be listed on Kindle, and, you know, and then immediately within a month, you'll have a first one in 5 days. But in a month, if it's really selling, you might have 7 versions of summary of Who Not How. And we said, you know, this is kind of tawdry. You know, we talked to them, and we've had about 5 of them, 5 or 6 of them taken down because it's too close to our stuff. It's almost, you know. Yeah, but that's,
well, and did you register the trademark on Who Not How?
Yeah, that's where we get them. That's where we get them with. Because you don't have exclusive control over a book title. You can have 10 books. With by the same name. There could be 10 books out there called Who Not How,
right?
But you can't have Ben Hardy. And what they were doing, they had, you know, summary, you know, of Who Not How by Dan Sullivan and Ben Hardy. Well, that you're right. Crossing the line there, you know.
Right.
And, you know, and it's like flies and mosquitoes. You know, you just make sure you have good screens. You know, and you make sure you close the door. And everything, but it's a constant thing. But, you know, and maybe it does us good. I don't know if it does us good. Somebody buys the summary and then they say, hey, I better read the book, you know, so I don't know. But but it's no different from knockoff Rolexes in Hong Kong.
Yeah, I see what I'm looking at the thing now. The one right after it is, it's not the how or the what, but the who. Succeed by surrounding yourself with,
Yeah, but, you know, it's Babs gets angry at it. I just consider it as, you know, it's like it's mosquito season, you know.
Yeah, right. Oh, there's another one.
Yeah, but I would say capitalism is no different now than it was in the marketplace of Rome. But it changes its methods. I mean, it changes its presentation. It changes. But this thing about capitalism is changing. Let's create conscious capitalism. Let's create humane. There's just capitalism, and there's somebody's emotional response to it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Just it's pretty amazing.
I mean, Peter Zion. I mean, I've read so much of Peter Zion, I could sort of tell. You know, one thing we know is that the United States is better at it than any other country, which means that it's not universal.
I think it's really interesting. I watched some of his videos, which I always find insightful, and I'm always surprised that, you know, he gets 300,000 or 400,000 people a day watching his dispatches. You know, it's really well done. He's good at articulating things. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to me.
It almost makes you want to go to Colorado, too.
Right. Isn't it? Yeah, it's beautiful, right? I mean, it's almost
I'm very easily communicating to you from 13,000 feet, everything, which is kind of said, he must be really in good shape, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, it almost looks he's faster responding than anyone else in the world. An event happens on Tuesday. And by Thursday, he's got an explanation for why it's happening. Yeah. He's really remarkable. In my lifetime, I've never come across anyone like him.
Yeah, it's really like it seems like such a macro level view of things that I'm always, you know, I'm kind of fascinated why you're so fascinated with this. Like, I mean, when you've read the book, you said like seven times or something. I mean,
well, his latest book, yeah, seven times complete, yeah.
Seven times and then, complete.
Yeah. And, you know, and what I'm looking for is there, you know, with anything when I read them, yeah, is there sort of a deeper level that he doesn't go into? Or mm-hmm. And so what I did is I just came out with my latest book, which is The Great Meltdown, mm-hmm. you know, and then I explained that wherever you are on the planet, you're constrained by the cost of money, the cost of energy, the cost of labor, and the cost of transportation. And no two places are equal in relationship to those four constraints. And the U.S. mm-hmm. is just at keeping those four costs the lowest of historically. I mean, right mm-hmm. back to the beginning. They've just been better for all sorts of lucky reasons, mainly because their geography, mm-hmm. the geography is so good. I mean, we talked about Florida, that Florida is proof that God loves real estate agents in the state of Florida.
That's exactly right.
Because yeah. you have, on the East Coast, you have three waterfronts.
That's right. Exactly. The ocean side and two intercoastals. And same all the way up yeah. the Gulf, too.
Yeah, the Gulf. It goes all the way to Texas, I think. Mm-hmm. And north of Florida, it goes all the way to Virginia, I think Virginia or Maryland, it's still, you yeah. know, the inner coast. And what it does is it prevents large storms from actually hitting the mainland because mm-hmm. that buffer zone of the intercoastal, you know, just stops big waves. It stops everything. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, you don't really have to go into the Atlantic Ocean very much once you start, if you're taking a boat trip. Private boat trip down the East Coast, if you start at Virginia.
Really go down the intercoastal all the way, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Start in yeah. Annapolis even.
Proves that God favors real estate.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, well, but, you know, people are always trying to create a standardized global version of reality. You know, that's been happening forever. But those four costs means there can be no standardization because it's, I mean, it's different in or it's different where you live than it is in Tampa.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I guess there's regional, like when you think about, it's transferable on every level, right? Like the whole, because the cost of transportation, you know, has, you know, the further away, more remote you are, the more mm-hmm. it costs to get something to you. And so even if, I think now I see kind of the thing that you're talking about, like if you go to a place where the labor costs are lower, perhaps, you've got to balance mm-hmm. with the cost of transporting the reduced goods that you've done back to where they're going to sell. So it all has to balance out.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, you can take the huge migration from New York, you know, from New York State to Florida right on. And, you know, people explain it politically and everything, but just compare the four melt costs between, you know, the cost of money is lower in Florida. The cost of energy is lower in Florida, labor and transportation. The costs mm-hmm. are lower. And I mean, there's a lot of political issues that make things expensive or inexpensive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah. I mean, that, for example, the court case where Trump was found guilty, you know, 2-3 weeks ago for something that's an antiquated law from 150 years ago that's never been inflicted on anybody, that in a business negotiation, he said his company was worth $1.2 billion, and it turned out it was only $800 million. And that's called negotiation.
Right.
I mean,
and, you know, market value, right?
That's market the whole thing value. And it's,
something is only worth what someone's willing to pay.
Yeah. And they said, well, this is fraud. But nobody was harmed, you know, like any negotiation, nobody was harmed. You agree on a price and, you know, the banks made money, the other side made money, he made money. And well, the word is going out now, don't invest in New York. Don't do business in New York. I mean, the moment that hit, and but the governor said, well, that's not what we meant by it. I'm so sorry.
Oh, boy.
The horse is out of the barn, you know?
Yeah, right. I mean, that's pretty crazy. I saw Kevin O'Leary was talking about just that he was saying.
He's having some good weeks right now.
Yeah, that's the death knell for New York investment. It's nobody's going to do anything there. Yeah. That's crazy.
So your melt cost just went through the roof just as a result of that court ruling.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. And so in big news, we saw Super Tuesday last week, and Haley's out, but not endorsing Trump.
She's like the warrior in Monty. I don't have legs and arms left, but these are mere flesh wounds.
That's right. I can still bite you. I can bite your kneecap.
Yeah, and for the life of me, I don't know what her game plan was because, I mean, she didn't do him any harm, but I just don't know, you know, what her gain was in doing what she did to it.
Right. Did you happen to...
She was betting that the court system is going to stop him from being the nominee and that she would be seen
as... I thought that's her game plan, is hang in there. She's just the last one standing at the end.
Yeah.
If Trump does get, you know, taken off or disqualified or whatever, which, by the way, what do you think the likelihood of that is?
Zero.
Zero likelihood. Okay. So, and I felt...
Especially after the Supreme Court case last week where it came up because of the Colorado...
The states can't take them off.
And,
right.
Yeah. And the nine Supreme Court justices, it was 9-0. It's had no
unanimous.
Come on. I mean, you can't run a rear. You can't run a country this way. And you can't have 50 states having different rules about who can run for...
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's shenanigans.
Yeah, but that's what the Supreme Court's for. You know, that's in the Constitution, But I don't really know. I mean, maybe she'll get a talk show on, you know, but, you know, I can't figure out what her future is based on this performance, you know.
Right.
So, yeah. But, I mean, yeah, you know, politics is an entrepreneurial, it's an entrepreneurial business, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's clear-cut winners and losers, and she's a loser right now.
Right. And it's very interested to see what the, you know, the RFK effect here, who that's going to affect more. Do you know what the projection is or who, who is that going to hurt more?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You don't really know. I mean, I saw him at, because Joe Polish had him at.
Yeah.
Genius, and you know, I mean, a lot of it they weren't talking about politics for president. And then we went to dinner at somebody's house in Scottsdale, and I was kind of say he's really sort of an ideal candidate for the president of a country that no longer exists. Like if he had run in the 70s or 80s, he would probably be. He would have led the Democratic Party. You know, I mean, he would have made it. But I don't think the country exists anymore that would elect him president. But you know, if he got 3 or 4% more of one party's voters, then he makes a big difference.
That's what I meant. He's like the green box on the roulette wheel. You know, he's the little edge that's gonna, the wild card in this it's not just black and red, it's not 50-50, he's a viable third party, and it's unfortunate. I mean, it's funny because we're definitely a three-party country in a two-party system, really, you know, that's the thing.
I mean, it's made a difference in some elections, like 2000. Well, Ross Perot got Bill Clinton elected. Bill Clinton would not have gotten elected. But the other one is Gore lost because there were 50,000 Ralph Nader votes in Florida. Mm-hmm. That's big. I mean, he lost by 500. He lost by 500.
And
he never that was never brought up. You know, well, it was the hanging Chads.
Hanging Chads. That's right. That is so funny. Those words.
I've got some friends named Chad. I've got friends named Chad. I don't want to hang. I don't want to hang any of my friends who are named Chad. You know,
which one do you want, Willardson or Jenkins?
Chad Johnson's one of our coaches. You know.
There you go. Yeah.
I've never had so many Chads in my life.
That's funny. It's not a common name either. I think.
No, but it must be contagious.
Yeah, as I go through, I'm realizing Dean's not as common as you might think either.
Yeah. And nobody gets called Bob or Tom or anything like that anymore. You know, they
Austin. They have, yeah, exactly.
Exotic names, you know. And so the other problem was that with Gore, nobody brought this up, but he lost Tennessee, his home state. I mean, even his home state didn't vote for him. Yeah, so there was a, you know, but it's been more recently, although in 1948, I think there were four people who got significant votes. Truman, sitting president, won, but he didn't win with 50%. He won, you know, 46. You know, so... Yeah, well, I don't think a third party can ever win unless it's replacing one of the existing parties, you know.
Yes.
And that hasn't happened since the 1800s.
Right. Yeah. Did you watch the State of the Union?
No, I don't watch television.
No, okay, but I meant whether you saw the highlights or the summary or what, any highlights of it. I haven't had a chance yet to even see.
I mean, what I saw is I've seen angry old people talking to themselves on the street.
Right, exactly. And I saw a video that very cleverly showed that he's given the same speech four times in a row. You know, he's got the same exact talking points. And it was so funny. They'd show it from, you know, from 2000, and then they'd show 2000 this year, you know, saying exactly the same lines. And it's just, it was pretty funny, actually. I was amazed. Yeah. There was, I love.
Well, did you ever, when Disneyland, California, Disneyland opened up, they had recreations, you know, they were in plastic or rubber form of Abraham Lincoln and, you know, George Washington and that.
Yeah, the Hall of Presidents, right.
But their arms moved and their lips moved because they had little tubes that had fluid in them, and, you know, they would manipulate the tubes, and, you know, and their hands would move. And they didn't show this at the State of the Union, but were there a lot of those little hoses coming up behind him? I don't know. You know, that were...
Oh, that's the best.
Watch Joe move.
Watch Joe move. Hey. He looks so lifelike.
Yeah. It's really the closest I've seen in a, you know, a high stakes election, president of the United States is as high as it gets. Where it's like the emperor's new clothes, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to mention that he's really, you know, this is the leader of the free world. And say, geez, you know.
Oh, man.
You know, yeah. You know, but, you know, you root for the home team, whoever the captain, you know, regardless of who the captain is, you know. So,
yeah.
Anyway. But, yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, somebody was saying... I've a longtime Canadian member of the Strategic Coach, goes back to the 80s, actually. And I had breakfast with him last, and he says, you know, I just, you know, he says, I know Biden's bad, but I just can't stomach the fact that we would have Trump again. There's something about it. And, you know, he was going on for about 5-10 minutes, and I've had other situations in Toronto, where Canadians are voicing their displeasure And I said, you know, I read the U.S. Constitution once a year. It doesn't take long to read. It's only typewritten. It's about 27 pages, you know, and most of it's just, you know, it's a set of rules, you know, and I said, nowhere in the U.S. Constitution does it say that American politics have to be pleasing to Canadians.
Any more than New Guinea politics have to be pleasing, right?
Yeah. I mean, you can be unhappy as can be. It matters not at all.
Uh-huh. That's so funny. Yeah, I can't wait to see how it all unfolds. I mean, certainly it's going to be an amazing 6 months or whatever we've
had. Oh, yeah. No, if you just say it's not politics, it's entertainment. It's
that's pretty good
entertainment, you know?
Yeah. Switching topics here. I've mentioned I've been playing around with the Atoms app on.
Did you get the connector for the?
I did. I got that, and on Monday I need to connect with the gentleman that sent it to me. I need to figure out how to.
Yeah, I explained in my email that it's done in FileMaker, which no longer exists. So it's hard to transport it.
So he offered to walk me through
something that no longer exists.
Right, exactly. But he offered to help me walk me through it. So I'm going to take him up on that.
Yeah.
Because I do want to try it. But it's been very interesting to watch this, just the way this
is clear.
It's so satisfying to see. I've had, you know, it shows I've got 10 reps down of my habit of waking up and drinking 500 milliliters of water first thing. So you can stack, I'm looking, you know, to stack all these things. This was a great week. I've been working with JJ Virgin, you know.
We got your phone message, you know.
Yes.
I
put together a little.
Dean, you have witnesses now.
Well, that's exactly it, right? I said to Joe, like, well, behind the scenes, while we were in Palm Beach, there was so much kind of rallying and, you know, going around in the most supportive way possible for, you know, to help me get on track, you know, weight-wise, health-wise. And, you know, Joe Polish has been just above and beyond, you know, in orchestrating and, you know, organizing all of this. I mentioned last week, you know, he came and spent a few days with me and really helped me get things on track. And I've, you know, been working with JJ. So, you know, this was my first week, you know, full. Joe left last Saturday, so this was my first week with JJ. But having the daily accountability and systems around, you know, what I'm doing, it's certainly a who, not how type of thing is really, you know, the importance of having a who that's kind of on board and guiding things. But I get into this nice, I'm accountable for in the more I send JJ the, you know, the daily story of yesterday kind of thing with, she's got me hooked up on a chronometer app, which basically tracks my macros, the protein, carbs, fat, and calories of everything that I eat. She's helping with my, you know, menu selection and all of this. So in the morning, after I drink my 500 milliliters of water, I weigh every day and take a picture of the screen.
Scale.
Scale, yes, exactly. And then I send her my Aura results for my sleep and readiness and yesterday's activity. And our goal, you know, I was... On average, when we were looking at it before, I would average, you know, 2,500 to 4,000 steps a day would probably be the average with, you know, probably 3,000 plus 3,200 is the kind of median of what, how many steps I would get in a day. So we've set now 4,000 is the baseline, the minimum. steps that I get every day. Mm-hmm. And so I send her that activity to show what that is. And then my chronometer, and she's got me focused on protein first, eating my, mm-hmm. you know, getting, you know, almost 150 grams of protein per day, which is really, it's a lot. I mean, I'm never hungry. And it's almost mm-hmm. like getting into the routine of trying to, you know, lead with that and stay.
Well, it's new. I mean, your body knows when it's had the necessary nutrition, and protein is the champ for giving nutrition.
Absolutely.
So, you know, complex carbs and, you know, and you can eat 5,000 calories of mm-hmm. simple carbs and you feel hungry.
Yeah. So this, this target. So,
and plus really, water makes a big difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So it's been great. So tomorrow will be the kind of week on week weigh in, but I'm mm-hmm. already down like 3.5 pounds from, so, you know, almost 1% of, that's the target, I guess, is 1% mm-hmm. of body weight per week is a good pace to keep on. And you're just getting in the habit and the routine. And
you, in 100 weeks, you'll be in the cloud.
That's exactly right. That's the goal, Dan. that by my 6th birthday, you know, because I'm 57 right now, you'll be 80, I'll be 58 in May.
Yeah.
And so, certainly taking this long-term view of by my.
Well, it's habits too. I mean,
that's all it is. It's the only thing you can do.
One, I was thinking, because I knew we'd probably talk about this topic today, mm-hmm. but I was thinking about just looking at habits as reality, and they're either working for you or they're working against you. And that's, that's not an opinion. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just that you can tell whether the habits are supportive mm-hmm. or not supportive. And the other thing, I was thinking about the gap and the gain. And I think mm-hmm. that if you just think in terms of replacing bad habits with good habits, you stay in the gain.
Yes.
And I think the gap is that you need to be penalized for your bad habits. You know, mm. I think there's a internal thing, you know, that you should feel guilty, you should feel shame mm-hmm. about your bad habits. I said, they're just habits. You know,
right.
They're just
exactly.
habits.
And that's, and so this really, this thing, like looking at this week here, and I think that I had lunch with Lior Weinstein yesterday. I went over to the Four Seasons in Orlando and we had a nice 3.5 hour lunch. And this was a lot of what we
You mean Mr. Good at Everything?
Mr. It's almost unfair, isn't it? Yeah. The guy's just so smart and everything. Right. But we had some great, conversations. And this was, the fact that there's nothing else you can do but what I'm doing habitually on a daily basis. That's the only path. It's not, that's the thing is there's no, it's not like this monumental effort because it's a big mountain to climb, to get to the top of, mount 100 pounds or whatever, the ultimate benchmark is. But to climb to the top of that mountain just requires that you've got to take steps every day. There's no possible way to get to the top in one day.
Nobody gets more than one day every 24 hours.
And that's exactly right. So having that benchmark of 1% a week is what you can safely and consistently lose is just that it's just stacking those things. And a week is the perfect, I think, amount unit of measurement, because it's, you can't really, that's the most important more than the daily, even, like the variation in one day. It's more important over a week that you take that. So that's all I'm focused on is the week. And we're already at the routine I've already got. And I'm very comfortable with consistency and habit. So I don't need a lot of variety in things. If I find certain things, we've got now some meal combinations that really work for me.
Yeah.
And if I can just, you know, stay on that track and continue to have the accountability, I think it's an inevitability, you know, it's just the watching it happen.
Well, it's like your 8 profit activators. I mean, just moving that to another thing. I mean, if you're doing all 8 and they're all contributing to a profit, it strikes me there's nothing to fix.
Right. Exactly. Oh, it's so funny, right? So yeah, it's so funny. I mean, just identifying that the key thing for me is just to continue raising the benchmark, right? Like raising my from 4,000 to 5,000 steps is the minimum on my way to 10,000, you know?
Yeah.
You measure steps or does that matter to you?
I mean, it's not my main focus, but if I get the right number of steps, I get a high 90s on my activity, you know, and every quarter or so I raise the number, you know, the steps. So I do right now, I probably average around 6,000 or 7,000 and I've done 10, you know, on some days, you know, when it's kind of walk in nature day, I'll get more than that. But, you know, but I'm doing a lot of things. Like my big thing that I've been working on for 4 months is that I never get in trouble with my meals. I get in trouble with snacking between meals. And so I've eliminated that. And I'm down, you know, 5 or 6 pounds just by doing that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, but anyway, first of all, kudos to just, you know, it really strikes me that Dean Jackson doesn't do anything and stick with it unless it makes intellectual sense.
That's true, probably, yeah. Huh?
No, I mean, you know your habits and you know your, I mean, we all have a measurement system on what constitutes progress.
Yes.
And my sense is until you get the way of something you can do every day that is intellectually satisfying, you don't do it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people try to make it emotional, you know, and everything, but you can't sustain it.
And even if it is, even if you get to the point, and I agree with you 100%, by the way, I don't perceive it as emotional, but, you know, that often that's, you know, well, what's the cause of this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
But the reality is that even if it were to uncover an emotional issue, that still requires then that intellectually you have to figure out what's the mechanics of what needs to actually happen. You know, it's like getting to the bottom of an emotional issue isn't on its own going to solve the problem the same way that figuring out the mechanics of what actually needs to happen. That's really the bottom line. But I'm very encouraged. This feels like a very different level of, you know, systemic change that's happening here.
Well, it's a process, you know, I mean, it's a process that consists of, you know, and you keep it, and every time I talk to you, you're adding some new habit to it. So,
and
my sense is that once you get the momentum of 10 good habits, you're motivated to have 20 good habits.
I agree, 100%. Yeah, I agree, because that then becomes a great game, you know, that's the, I love to gamify things. That's keeps us interested, you know?
Okay, I have a meeting in 5 minutes with Daniel White.
Okay.
Who's staying with us in Chicago.
Chicago, so, awesome.
But I have you in my calendar for next Sunday.
We're
going to be in Toronto next Sunday.
You are going to be, because on my calendar it says no Dan podcast.
But I will be there.
Okay, perfect.
And fantastic. In the same time zone.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay, bye.
Bye.